Good morning, everyone. This is Joe Cristiano, and welcome to Liberty Talk Radio, your independent streaming internet radio station and libertarian voice, broadcasting 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, from our studio in Tulsa, Oklahoma, to around the world. This broadcast is being brought to you on Thursday, March 29, 2007. It is now 6:31 Central Time in the good old USA. Folks, this station is your antidote to popular talk radio, where you are expected to do more than just listen. You are expected to think. Although we broadcast from the United States, libertarian principles of individual freedom and responsibility are universal and apply to your area of residence, be it New York, Bangkok, Rio de Janeiro, Berlin, or Stalingrad. It's time for us to take back control of our government now before this bureaucratic, oversized, and self-serving government starves us of our liberty, our property, our freedom, and our rights. To do this, we must shed our conventional thinking regarding our political structure. We need to be revolutionaries in thought, dissidents in action. Only after we recognize what our government is doing to our freedom and our Constitution will we start taking it back. And this program is just about that. Good morning, everyone. During our live broadcast this morning, you can call in and we can interact live over the broadcast at calling 646-652-4620. Again, that's 646-652-4620. And we can take your comments while on the air. At any other time when we're off the air, that is, you may call area code 903-551-2186 to leave a voice message. Of course, you may email us anytime at comments@libertytalkradio.com. That's comments@libertytalkradio.com. And we'll try to respond to your email during our next broadcast. The first thing I'd like to... Today we're going to talk a little bit about the gold standard and what that really means. I think this is core to our understanding of liberty. Now, the first thing I'd like to mention is the fact that I get asked incessantly, at least by members of my family, why I do not discuss current issues. For example, the Gonzalez debacle, you know, or the Scooter Libby case. Those are all issues that annoys. I have little respect for the way our government works. Why would I expect, as a libertarian, a true libertarian, why would I expect anything from our government? So when things get gobbledygooked, when things go wrong, when things are done unethically and wrong, when the government lies, why should we talk about it? This is what we should expect. We should expect exactly that. Anything other than that should be an absolute shock. We should have nitro pills so we don't have a heart attack in the event that the government actually tells us what actually is going on, is actually telling the truth. Now, they never say the truth. They say what is politically expedient, and that's the thing. So by talking about all of these issues, it would make as much sense for this program to talk about those individual issues as it would be if I talked about the Anna Nicole Smith death. I mean, it's irrelevant. We have to understand where we are as people. We can't discuss current issues unless we understand where we're coming from, what we should expect. And the problem is that our school systems, our news media, don't espouse this anymore. We don't talk about our civil responsibilities, our government, and how our government was initially designed. Our entire school system is geared around just memorizing a bunch of stuff on how good the government is and how bad our government is and how bad every other government is. I mean, it's an indoctrination program. Now, they may have some good ways of teaching math. They do a horrible job of reading, right? And their history is all skewed. So why should I just add to all of this? I don't even like talking about the eligible candidates like Barack Obama and Hillary and the rest of them. I mean, so what? I mean, what they say, the problem is what they say has no foundation. They pick and choose each issue, and then they couch the wording. And let me give you an example. Before we get on the gold standard, let me give you an example. I have here a chart of what the pure right believes and what the pure left believes, you know, in the traditional sense of, or I should say in the conventional sense of left and right. Not liberal or conservative. We're talking about left and right. There's a big difference. For example, the people on the left generally believe that government, believe in a government-regulated economy. They think that's good, right? The people on the right believe that government should only regulate morality, right? Now, if you're a libertarian, answering the left is we shouldn't have a government-regulated economy. We should believe in personal freedom. We own ourselves, right? Now, that's a fundamental, basic principle and philosophy. So once we understand that, any issue that comes up, we say, how does that square with me? For example, the war on drugs. The right has a moral obligation to keep people, you know, off of drugs. The left say we should have government regulation. And the libertarians are saying, wait, I own me. I can take whatever I want. I kill myself, my business. Now, this program is not espousing, you know, drug using or anything. We do not at all. I've never taken a drug in my life. I mean, other than prescription drug when I was sick. But, you know, that's it. So we're talking about, the left says government regulation. The libertarian says personal freedom. The right says government regulated morality. And then the libertarians say, no, we have freedom of morality, economic freedom. Everything is free. We make those decisions ourselves. I'll give you another example. The liberals believe in the United Nations led by U.S. military action. They say, that's a good idea. Let's get in there. The right believes military adventurism. In other words, nation building. Iraq is a perfect example. Now, where do libertarians sit? All right. Now, from the left, we say, forget about this United Nations-led U.S. military actions. We believe in non-interventionist foreign policy. Because every time we do, we wind up propping up another dictator. UN or not. On the other hand, if you're on the right, military adventurism, you know, we just believe in a robust national defense. Now, I can go on and on and on. So it's understanding the principles. And now that's why it's going to lead in to the gold standard. I heard Richard Dawkins yesterday. Now, a lot of people don't like Richard Dawkins because the name of his book is The God Delusion. He is a brilliant man. Now, he's an espoused atheist. And if you say you're an atheist, it's like saying you're a devil worshiper. Atheism has such a horrible connotation. And yet, all of the atheists that I have known, I mean, people who have espoused it, have been the kindest, most moral people I have ever, ever come across. And not because you're an atheist doesn't make you a good person. But, you know, one is not consistent with the other. And he is a very kind person. He's a very thoughtful person. He's a very brilliant person. And he brought up the point where someone called in and said, well, you know, without believing in God, you know, the universe has no meaning. And his answer was perfect. The universe does not owe you a meaning. Now, how does that apply to government regulation, government and our personal responsibility? You see, the government doesn't owe us that. We do not have to say we cannot live in the United States unless we have a strong government telling us what to do. That's not true. The government doesn't owe us that, and we should not expect that. What he is saying about religion and God, and I'm not asking you to agree with him, but I'm asking you to understand his logic, that's all. You know, I say the same about government. What would we do without government? Government doesn't owe us anything. We don't need government. We can govern ourselves. And no, there would not be anarchy in the street. Right? Please understand that. That libertarians believe that we can govern ourselves. That we are basically a moral people anyway. There's going to be some wackos out there. There's wackos out there anyway. And the government doesn't stop that. In fact, it exasperates it. We have the biggest prison population in the world. Why? Because we have a war on drugs. We have a war on everything. I'm waiting for the war on badness. And anyone who's bad is going to be locked up. Whatever your definition of bad is. I mean, we are, our minds are so muddled right now, so murky in our thinking, that if a doctor wants to administer medical marijuana to help a patient, that guy will serve a lifetime in jail. I mean, is that not crazy? Or if I've gone stark raving mad and I'm looking from at the earth from another planet. I normally, at these days, I tell you, I'm a pessimist at this point. Every day, a friend of mine calls, he says, I don't think things are getting any better. I don't think we're going in the right direction. And I agree, we're not going in the right direction whatsoever. With all the radio talk shows, with even with all of the institutes and think tanks that say, this is wrong, look at history. Because it doesn't make any difference. The government does not look to think tanks to make decisions. It looks at the money situation. Money drives everything. Money drives power. Money, 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 money. It's the money gives you power, and the power drives the world. And that's it. I mean, you can write your congressman till you're blue in the face, and the only time your congressman may alter his position is if he knows that people are going to literally come into his office and drag him out into the street and burn him in effigy. Then he'll say, well, maybe I shouldn't do this. But then he'll concoct another bill, rephrase it, and get his way anyway. I mean, you can't win that game. And I can't win that game. And yes, things are not going in the right direction. I don't know how to turn it around. I think even if we had 15 million people march on Washington in one day and hand in listed grievances, I still don't think it would turn around. Because it would not change those people who are actually controlling what goes on. And who those people are, who knows? But we know it's the big banking interest. People with the money who lend money to other people. They have to protect their interests, and they influence government. Iraq has to do with gold, black gold called oil. Understand that. Has nothing to do with anything else. If we were so concerned about despots in other countries and the way they treat people and all this other stuff, hell, we would be in Africa. We're not in Africa. There's no money in Africa. There is no money in Africa. Follow the money, ladies and gentlemen, and you will follow our government. We have troops in 130 countries out of 193, including the Vatican. Think about that. Why? To protect our money interests. We have them there because we want to ensure that all the people are living good. Oh, they're living like hell. They're living in poverty and destitution. Nearly one-third of the population of the world doesn't even have a clean glass of water. Shame on all of us for that. And you think, our government, the United States, is going to change that? They're just protecting their investment. We don't have aircraft carriers going around Australia. We have aircraft carriers in the Persian Gulf because that's where the black gold is. And now we're going to talk about the gold standard. People wonder, and I've always wondered, where does money come from? It's very simple. Believe it or not, it's very simple. The process is incredibly complicated. It literally makes absolutely no sense. So I'm not going to go through the whole process. I'm just going to give you the starter. And then you can envision all the rest are paper entries, right? Think of this. The government prints a fancy piece of paper called a treasury note, right? Then, and I think I mentioned this in last week's broadcast, but I'm going to tie this into the gold standard, right? And then says, there it is. There's, you know, $1 billion. $10 million. And there's a $10 million worth of treasury notes, right? The Federal Reserve puts that in motion, right? And then more money is printed. $10 million is printed out of thin air. Now, there's your liability. Your asset actually is the money that's going to be paid back on it, right? It's you have an asset and a liability. You have something that you've given away, and now you have an accounts payable, and then you have an accounts receivable. And the accounts receivable, the reason why it can be booked as an asset, because the government can force us to pay that bond back. Someone's going to pay that bond back. And it lasts, and of course, the way it's done is it's done through the taxes that the government imposes on us, right? Now, the more money, the more paper that the government prints fiat currency, the more it inflates. Think of the word inflate. It inflates the amount of money. Instead of having, let's say, $3 trillion outstanding, now you have $3.1 trillion outstanding, all right? So every dollar you have in your pocket is worth proportionally less. That's inflation. Inflation has nothing to do with prices. Prices are a result of inflation. It doesn't cause the inflation. So it's just the government's printing money that causes inflation. Now, how did we get this way, and what's the alternative? Well, if we go back in history, and it wasn't too long ago, it must have been 100 years or so ago, what people would do is people would attain wealth by working. They would attain wealth by working or whatever, and preferably but not by looting, obviously, and they would get paid in coins that had some intrinsic value, let's say gold or silver. They would take this gold or silver that they've earned, right? That which they didn't use for their daily needs, they would put in a depository. Now, back in those days, they weren't banks in the traditional sense of banks. They were like a secure lockbox. It's like going to the bank and putting it in a lockbox. And they would give this gold or the silver, right, to a bank, not a bank, well, let's call it a bank, to a bank, and the bank would book it. And they say that Joe Cristiano just gave me $100, you know, value, or 3 ounces of gold, and it goes into my account. Now, what transpired from there is that people said, geez, you know, I really need that gold because I want to buy something. But they couldn't take the gold out and mail it. They couldn't, you know, go deliver it. It'd take them a month to get there. And so what the bank would do, right, or what the depository would do, or what the warehouse would do, of course it had to be legitimate, and people had to recognize it as legitimate, is that they would issue a piece of paper. They would issue a note. And that note would say, Joe Cristiano has, you know, 3 ounces of gold in the depository. Now, that note was negotiable. I can then mail that to someone overseas to buy something or give it to anyone. And that person knew that that piece of paper represented 3 ounces of gold. Now, the recipient of that could go to the depository, to the bank or to the warehouse, whatever you want to call it, would go there and say, by the way, I have this note that's been endorsed over to me. I sold him a wheat. You know, I sold him some goods, and he paid me with this, and here it is. I'd like the physical gold. They would go back in their vault. They could not alter the amount of that gold. They couldn't lend it out. And they would give it to the person, and the person would have gold. And that's how the monetary system started. That's how these notes started. In fact, I have a note, a $20 note. It was printed in 1926, and that's exactly what it is. It's a U.S. government. It's a $20 bill. It looks like the $20 bills you see, very similar to the $20 bills today. I mean, except for the brand new ones, which have changed the design, but the ones of just a couple of years ago. And what it says on there is, you know, this is a gold certificate that the presenter, you know, the bearer can present this to the U.S. Treasury, you know, to the depository, and get equivalent of $20 in gold coin. It says it right on the face, in gold coin. So we would go there. I can go to the treasury with that, or I used to be able to go to this treasury, go there, give it to them, and they would give me my $20 in gold coin. Now, that gold coin universally was worth $20, or whatever the market would bear. It would go up and down depending on market situations. But it was very, very stable. And governments basically said, you know, governments were responsible for weight and measures. You know, if the guy says 1 ounce of gold, that better be 1 ounce of gold. And there had to be all sorts of standards as to, you know, what 1 troy ounce of gold would include and all this other good stuff. And that's all it was. So it was a very, very simple system. And it worked. The European Union at the time, 100 years ago, flourished on that. Now, there were a couple of problems with the system. And it wasn't from our way. First of all, there was no inflation. And the only inflation was the increase in the amount of gold outstanding. But that was all right because you had an economy that was flourishing. You had populations that were growing. And generally speaking, the amount of gold that was placed in circulation approximated the amount of the growth in the population and the growth in the economy. So as the economy grew, the amount of gold, and they sort of went hand in glove. So you didn't have inflation. In fact, the price of, even today, the value of gold, the purchasing power rather of gold today, is the same as it was in 1813. Zero inflation from 1813 to today. Now you say, well, how could that be? It was only worth $20 back then, and now it's $650. Well, that's how much the dollar has deflated. You see, it's an equalizer. Now, what's really interesting is that if you think about that, and you really have to think about that, how would I do that? Well, you would work. They would, your company would give you a note, let's say $20 for working that day, and that would be $20 that would say, this is redeemable in gold. Just like the $20 gold piece that I have hanging on my wall that I look at every single morning to remind me. Right? Now, I said there was a real problem with that system, and that is governments could not wage war. Governments did not have control over the economy. As the Rothschild family said, you can keep your army, you can keep your nations, you can keep your buildings, you can keep your commerce, just give me control of your currency. And that's what the Federal Reserve did. It gave control of the currency to someone else, known as the Federal Reserve, which in fact is not, which is not a federal organization. It is a private cartel made up of the J.P. Morgans, the Morgan family, the Rothschild family, et al., and probably the Rockefellers are thrown in there also. So it's very interesting that we have a Federal Reserve System, which is our monetary system, which is not federally owned. It is not even private. I mean, it's private in the sense that, or public, in the sense that people own stock in it. I mean, the banks own the stock in the Federal Reserve, the individual Federal Reserve banks do. The Federal Reserve of Chicago, New York, you know, Los Angeles. However, that's non-voting stock. They're just part of the system. It's just a paper entry. Right? So they just create. Now, the way you start wars is you have to do either one or two things. What they did in the old days is that country A would attack country B and do what? Pillage the country, take all of its assets, and then convert. And if they didn't have enough gold, they took that whatever assets they could and converted it to gold, took that gold, and paid the mercenaries. See, so one country would fight another country for its gold, for its assets, right? But it was a real tough thing to do. You had to find the gold and you had to get it, right? Well, it was tough to wage war. Isn't it so much easier to wage war if you just print some money like we're doing now? And see, what we do now is we just print more money, create more debt. Now we're over $9 trillion in debt, and $9 trillion is an unimaginable number. We cannot envision, our minds cannot envision $9 trillion. It is too large of a number. I heard that if you took $100 bills, and you stack one on top of the other, brand new $100 bills stacked one on top of the other, and you just made a pile, right, and it was 40 inches high, that would be $1 million. $9 trillion would go over 6 miles into the air. Right, think about it. A million is about chest high to a normal person, right? Chest high is $1 million. A trillion, the $9 trillion, would be over 6 miles in the atmosphere. I mean, it's an unimaginable. Now, those $100 bills, $1 bills, stacked that way, would go, I don't know, to the moon and back 6 times or something like that, some ridiculous thing like that. But we have to understand that we are just printing money. And every time the printing money, we print the money, it's additional money. It's a tax on us because it puts more money in circulation, which makes each dollar that we own less valuable. Just like this one Mona Lisa, it's there is you can put no value on the Mona Lisa. I mean, you can say I'll give you $1 billion for it, $1 trillion for it. There's no value because there's only one. And the person who owns it owns the Mona Lisa, right? Now, if there were 1,000 Mona Lisas, well, then all of a sudden, maybe each one would be worth $1,000 or $100,000. I mean, you could put more of a value on it. Now, what if there were a trillion Mona Lisas paintings, all identical? Well, you can probably find them in the dollar store. And that's what happens to our money supply. The more it's outstanding, the less it's worth. That's inflation. You cannot inflate on the gold standard. Even if there was a big gold find, it would never be enough that you could circulate it all around the world to deflate the monetary system to a point where it would be harmful. I mean, the changes would be so slight, it wouldn't be. And you would have no boom and bust because I would have money in the bank, right? And I would give it out. And everyone would get paid the same way. Even if you were a poor person, a person making a little money, you'd have a little gold. But you'll always have something. And you never have to worry about a depression. Now, the Federal Reserve came into being because it was supposed to even out the booms and busts, which it's not. In fact, it exasperated the whole thing. Right after the Federal Reserve, well, we had the monetary crash of 1914 that we're going to talk about someday. And we also had, of course, the Great Depression. Because all we did was screw around with the money supply, right? Now, back then, we're on a gold standard, so there was a limited amount of dollars outstanding. The government withdrew the money, and then all of a sudden, people didn't have enough, and that was the depression. It had very little to do with the stock market. It had very little to do with productivity. It had to do with the government screwing around with the monetary system. And they did that because they wanted to protect themselves, because the European countries we're starting to ask for, hey, we need some more gold. We're starting to call our debts in because we have to finance World War I and the aftermath of World War I. Okay? They needed our gold, and we shut everything down. Big mistake. Anyway, well, let me put it this way. In the Depression of 1930s, money was king. If you had even a little amount of money, you were pretty well off. In the next financial crisis, and there will be one, it may not be in my lifetime, but in the next financial crisis, which is going to be horrible, ladies and gentlemen, it will be so horrible, you cannot imagine. Just imagine if one day you woke up and people said, no, I don't want that worthless piece of paper called a Federal Reserve note. I realize it's not worth anything. I need something else. Our entire economy would just implode. Industries would go out of business overnight. There would be poverty around the world. It's unimaginable. I mean, the Depression of 1930 was just a slowdown. We're talking about total chaos, economic chaos, and it could easily happen. This house of cards that we have right now, with all governments just printing their own monetary money without any standard whatsoever, and everything's just relative. As the American Institute of Economic Research, one of their white papers on the monetary system said, yeah, the U.S. dollar is the world's tallest dwarf. I mean, that's pretty heavy-duty language. Understand that. But in the next financial crisis, the money will be worthless, and there will be things of value, and that should be the gold standard and anything related to it. Okay? Well, geez, we're about almost through with our program. Isn't that something? We're about through with our program for today. On Sunday evening, we're going to have George Phillies speak to us. He is a candidate, a libertarian candidate for president of the United States. I think he's going to be very interesting. I think he's going to be somewhat different than our other candidates that we've had. We had three so far. We've had Daniel Imperato from Florida. We had Christine Smith, she's from Colorado. And we had Steve Cubby from California. And they all had all basic libertarians, except for Daniel Imperato was not. I wish he was. I'd like to interview him again and really probe into the foundation for some of his programs, and maybe we'll have him on the program again. But this Sunday should be prove interesting. So tune in. This will be Central Time. Tune in at 8:30 and call in to 646-652-4620, and you'll be able to speak with him and me directly and ask any questions that you might have. Okay? And with that, we'll conclude this program. This is the end of today's broadcast. We'd like to thank Rantshakers Audiology for their financial support, and we'd like to thank you for listening in. You can further the cause of liberty by recommending this program to your friends. And let us hear from you. Our email address is comments@libertytalkradio.com, or phone in your questions to 903-551-2186. Remember, you are either allowing your liberties to be taken away, or you are striving to protect them. Unfortunately, there's no middle ground. Until next time, stay well, stay tuned.